Hey, this is Aaron Carnes. We started this podcast in 2021 to promote my book, In Defense of Ska. Since then, the podcast has grown into its own thing. I've been working on an expanded second edition. I interviewed new people, edited every chapter, and there's a new final chapter, 30,000 new words. The expanded second edition of In Defense of Ska will be released on October 29th, 2024. Can you do something for me? Pre-order it right now at clashbooks.com under the Books tab. The more copies it sells in advance, the more it'll get people to support ska music. Thanks.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to In Defense of Ska. We aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of the music. Ska deserves the respect genres like punk, hip-hop, and hardcore find among their listeners. And as today's episode demonstrates, there's even ska supergroups. Our host is renowned music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska, Aaron Carnes.
On February 13th this year, a brand new ska punk supergroup was announced called Mutiny. The band contains members from Voodoo Glow Skulls, Dissidente, Death by Stereo, Adolescence, and more. The group's first self-titled EP was released on SPI Records on February 20th. Though the recent announcement makes the group new to the public, this first EP is the byproduct of 4 years of work. The record has gotten a lot of great feedback and has been well received, which really shows that there's a receptive audience for ska punk right now. And now, joining me is my co-host, veteran ska musician Adam Davis of Omnigon and Link 80.
So recently when I saw Voodoo Glow Skulls, Eric Scazzini, their saxophone player, handed me a CD.
Oh, yeah?
And said, keep this secret.
Oh, damn.
And it was this. It was Mutiny.
Yeah, so that's a big, it was a secret for a while, so.
The worst kept secret.
Some people, a lot of people were in on the secret, yeah.
I'd also had Chris from Dissidente hit me up about doing mock-ups for art for the manga for this, and it was just something that didn't fit into my schedule.
Wow.
But yeah, Chris had talked about this to me before as well. And now here it is. It's actually happened.
It's cool. Like, I think one of the cool things about this group is that they're not all musicians from the same era of ska.
Yeah.
They're not all the same age. So it's a nice cool connector. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the Wavebreaker series. We're taking ska musicians from different time periods and we're bridging the gap. I'm always for that.
Yeah. We've got things, this band, you know, Rude Girl Review, the Kilowatts. We should have more supergroups and side projects and temporary bands and ska. The more the merrier.
So we should probably get right into it and talk about Mutiny, this new band, this new all-star supergroup.
Hat group. We wear many hats in this band.
Hat band. I guess am I in the band? I got a hat. We shouldn't talk about stuff that people have to see visually. Sorry, we're shooting video. I fell prey to it already.
Ease them with the knowledge that we're wearing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I did the thing. Yes. Yeah.
We are wearing hats. We wear hats.
We wear.
We are not ashamed anymore.
Let's go through the list. Who is in Mutiny? Who has played on the Mutiny record, even if they're not an official member? Let's get the full list of this band.
Jerry Reed. I'm just making that. Never mind.
Just making up names.
Earl Scrub.
Real names.
Well, Chris, do you want to lead this one?
No.
Well, there's myself, Ephraim, there's Eric, there's Eric Scazzini, who everybody knows from Voodoo, our saxophone player, and Mike, who plays drums, plays in The Adolescents, Death by Stereo, Sun Must Die, and He's played with many.
There you go.
Peoples. There's Chris Ruckus from Dissidente, who you all know in multiple projects. Our great friend JP, who kind of started these song ideas with Eric many years ago, likes the music. Like the idea for the band happened, and then, oh, let's try and use some of these songs, you know? And then Esteban from Matamosca played some keys on it. Adam played bass.
My buddy Adam, yeah.
Actually, the story of Adam. None of us have ever met Adam.
I went to high school with Adam, and he was the bass player in the first band that I ever played in called Peanut and Me, which was actually a ska punk band. So it was kind of funny. You know, since I'm 39, and the last time we recorded anything, I think I was 15, and it was a ska punk band. And then the only next time I played in a ska band is now with him. It was kind of cool.
So does Adam have a last name, or is this sort of like, is it secret who this Adam person is?
Or is it like Madonna?
His name is Adam Shaw. Yeah, from Orange County. Ripping bass player.
Do you remember the 80s stand-up comic called The Unknown Comic, and he wore a paper bag on his head?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Could be the unknown bass player. Wear like a paper bag. Wouldn't that be cool?
I like that you went with The Unknown Comic and not like fucking chicken. Fucking what was his name? A Buckethead. Yeah. a little more on the nose, I think.
So, who are the singers from the Japanese bands that are on the record also?
Oh, Shinji and Ryo from the band Frail, who some people may know from back in the day. They were called Frailhead Squeeze, but they shortened it to Frail. I mean,
it's a good update. It's a good sound name.
I kind of like the old, but like if. Honestly, like if I was to think of a band that Mutiny should tour with, it'd be Frail because they're so good. We're actually trying to make it happen.
Yeah, hell yeah.
But they are one of the most, I think they're the most brutal ska adjacent band like I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Frail's gnarly. But so those guys sang on it and they translated the lyrics to Japanese, got all the cadences the same, figured out all the harmonies, picked up out all the parts, did all the same harmonies, melodies. We couldn't believe it. Yeah, they matched all the grunts and growls and screams. You know how hard that is? Even doubling your own vocal is like,
yeah.
Dude, I can't make this match. I'm like, damn it. You know what I mean? Like, they did it so perfect.
I feel like all the Japanese bands and Japanese musicians are on a totally different level.
Oh, dude, yeah. They're way down here, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I want to see a Mutiny Frail tour, but I want them to sing your songs, and then I want you guys to sing their songs.
Oh, geez.
All right?
Yeah, have fun,
dude. Dude, I'm going to go ahead and admit it now. I'm just not good enough. They're so good, dude. Those guys are on another plane. Like, how do you?
On another level.
Yeah. Pretty incredible. But yeah, so everybody came together. Our good friend Jay Stolo recorded the record for us.
Yeah.
And mixed it and mastered it. And they just sent him their version of the vocals and he just remixed it with their vocals. Jay actually used to play in a band with Mike called The Sparring.
Yep, local hardcore band.
And then Jay is the guitar tech for the band Papa Roach.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Random. You know, like so random. Yeah. So that's kind of the Mutiny team, you know, and now with SPI, we have an even bigger team.
Yeah.
And Jose.
And Jose, let me not forget Jose, who you all know from Voodoo Glow Skulls, from the Murder Horns. Jose played all the trombone on the record. So it's pretty rad. Shout out Jose. Everybody check out his new band, Bad Demeanor.
Yeah, they're sick.
Yeah.
So this project was announced very recently. It was a secret project for many years, but I'm told by the head of SPI, Chris Reeves, who is also the editor of this podcast.
He edits the podcast? I didn't know he edited your podcast. No way.
Also, his birthday today. So happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Chris.
And his birthday is today as we're recording, not when this runs. Yeah. So, he said that this was not a great kept secret, that many people knew about this project. So
I wonder who told them, Chris. I wonder who showed everyone the record.
So he wanted me to ask who knew about this project prior to its announcement.
Who knew about it?
As far as I know, it first got leaked to a few bands in Japan through Eric. And then
yeah, we'll blame Eric for this one.
No, I'm blaming him for the Japan part. But then Chris leaked it to a lot of people. Whatever, Chris. And we told people about it along the way. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's, mm-hmm. like amongst all our friends, it was just kind of called Eric's project.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like over here on the West, everyone's like, oh, Eric's project. Oh, it's Eric's thing. And over the years, he would always talk about it and talk about this, talk about that. And eventually, he was like, hey, do you want to sing on my project with Chris? And I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, that's awesome. And fast forward now,
yeah,
there's four singers in the band. Wild. And we already have in the works a hybrid English-Japanese set.
Wow.
For upcoming show. Yeah, one of them, one of us.
And you're playing Supernova. You already announced that you're playing SPI Fest and Supernova, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there any other dates, or are those not to be announced at this point?
Those are the only real dates, but we're talking about the other places and things we're trying to see if we can make work and start playing some more. Yeah. It's kind of cool.
So Ephraim, you did vocals on a Power Up song called Corner Office.
Yeah, Power Up. Damn, they are fucking heavy. We did that in Belgium.
Yeah.
I did those vocals in Belgium, yes.
you were, okay, so you were in Belgium?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were you on tour with Voodoo or something?
No, I was there with Death by Stereo, and how did we meet this guy with his home studio?
Somehow we met this dude that let us practice at his home studio, because that tour, we had two new members in the band that were touring with us for this. And one of them, we had never even met in person. We literally met him in Chicago in the, like where his flight and our flights met. Like, hey, what's up? Good to meet you. Flew to Belgium. So we got our first practice, and that happened to be actually a studio as well. So got to another practice, then he did the vocals there right then.
Yeah.
Right after an hour travel
experience. Exactly. And
it was a ridiculous day.
Our guitarist from Death by Stereo, JP,
yeah,
not to be confused with the JP from Mutiny. There's too many JPs and Chris's. But it's a thing in my life, JPs and Chris's. But JP from Death by Stereo did the guitar solo on that song too.
So how did you, did you know Power Up? Did they just ask you to do it, or were you already friends with them?
Eric hit me up about it, because Eric is their trombone player. I don't know if anybody knows that.
Oh. But Eric Scazzini?
Yeah.
Eric plays sax.
Yeah, he played sax on that.
I'm thinking of Jose. Sorry. Eric
plays sax. I was like, damn, he plays trombone too? Oh, man.
Eric's been playing with them now. So, I was thinking about Jose. You know what? Eric and Jose just look so much alike.
They look a lot alike. I can never tell them apart.
Really easy to mix them up.
Yeah, yeah, very easy.
I don't even know the difference.
You know, Peru, Pittsburgh, it's all the same.
Twins?
The twins. Yeah, the movie. Let's talk about the movie Twins. Okay. One of the best movies ever made. Tonight, bro. Tonight is your night, bro. Yeah. Dude, that's one of the best movies ever. Great cast. Sorry.
Shout out Twins.
Shout out Twins. Yo, Twins. The twins.
I love it.
You singing on this Power Up song, though, is kind of part of the story of Mutiny becoming part of the SPI family, though, isn't it? Because they're on SPI. Yeah.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
You solved the riddle.
It is.
Solved the riddle.
I think a lot of that's through Eric, too, because I actually introduced Eric to those dudes. Because I had known Aaron and Justin for years and years and years. So when they asked me to play the organ on that record, and then got me to do a vocal on the first track, and then and they said, hey, do you know anybody who plays fucking horns? I was like, yeah, my dude Eric, we have this thing. And so that got Eric playing with them, which then got Ephraim playing with them, which then got us in contact with Chris.
I see.
And there you go. That's how it happened.
So this project, so this project began with Eric and JP 4 years ago. Chris, were you involved that far back?
Yeah, it kind of started a little bit like their songs they had earlier. Like they had like demos and things, and then they were just like, "Hey, this hasn't gone anywhere. Do you want to re-record these?" And they just passed those on to me.
I was going to ask. You mentioned someone else that did the recording, but I was reading that you were pretty involved with the recording when everybody was in COVID and they were still doing like at home and stuff.
I did half the vocals in Pittsburgh, or most of the vocals in Pittsburgh. I only did like what, one song in LA? Yeah. One or one and a half songs or something. But yeah, the vocals were split up. I did them at your homie's apartment.
Yeah, at Bob's house.
At Bob's house. We had a great time. Yeah. We had such a good time. Oh, and Bob's part of the Mutiny team too. We forgot to mention Bob.
Big
thing. I did most of the vocals in one night at Bob's house. Like, remember that? I got all stoned and just figured it out with you. You just kept.
Yeah, it was fun as fuck.
Yeah, you were just like, all right, let's feed you. Like, it's really cool. Chris kind of like felt out all the parts with me and helped me like, kind of like he was like imagining things through how I would do it. And like, oh, I try it like this. And then like, then Eric would kind of like tell me and Chris, like he'd be like the Yoda of it. And, you know, like, you know, or like he'd be like, push it with more feel or lay back. Like it was kind of cool the way, I mean, Eric had a different perspective on vocals because he plays sax. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and he knows how you sing, like with voodoo and stuff, and like new, you know, to make it differentiated between that too.
Totally. It's way more Death by Stereo than it is voodoo vocally.
Absolutely.
You know, obviously musically, we follow part of the voodoo tradition of just going super fast, you know? It's awesome. And this guy, I think that the real game changer and the thing that like I think took the record to another level was Mike, because the drumming on the record is fucking insane. Like
it's insane.
It's bonkers. And he did it alone. He didn't just did it to a click. How, what? Nobody jamming with you. Like, huh?
I mean, how do you get done?
What?
You gotta do that shit when not everyone's in the same city, you know what I mean?
What? So. How do you do that? I didn't memorize anything, dude. Like, I mean, can't remember shit.
I had reference tracks and shit. It worked. It was fun. It was a lot of kind of flying by the seat of your pants, you know? I think the next recording will be, even now that everything's kind of a solidified unit, after I got included and everything like that, like, the next one will kind of be...
We're talking about trying to be actually in the same place next time, a little less painful,
you know?
Yeah, we're all trying to, like... We're demoing already, but like we have a bunch of songs we're demoing already, seeing what works and what doesn't. But like, what am I trying to say? I think we'll be a little more of a unit when we actually get to actual tracking time.
I'm excited for the next thing. The next thing, since it's already been a thing for a while, you know, we kind of know what to expect, I think, going into it, because that's what I was kind of curious on, what the songs were even going to be after the drums, because I was doing that for demos.
I don't even think there were horns at that point. It was all on guitar.
So when I started hearing things progress, it literally turned into like a different song.
It's really cool.
So now going into recording the next things with hearing everything as a whole, I can play drums differently to kind of like tune in with everyone else too, which will be nice.
I just can't wait for it to get like more raw when we play live.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, like how it changes. Songs can't help but to be more raw live, you know? And like, I can't wait to hear these songs just at an insane volume. I can't wait, dude.
Yeah.
So we're going to fly to Connecticut and play together for the first time and rehearse out in Connecticut for a few days. And then we're going to play SPI Fest.
Are you guys going to have the unnamed bass player play bass?
The unknown bass player with the paper bag.
I'm pretty sure he's making it.
All right. Yeah.
Wow, this is going to be exciting to get to meet your bass player.
It'll be the first time I've played with him since I was like 16 or 15.
It's insane.
That's wild.
It's so weird when everybody's getting together, because like, what's going to happen when they all find out I'm an asshole?
I mean, I've known for years.
But, yeah, dude, fucking, it most certainly is good. It's going to be cool. Yeah. It's going to be cool. And we're all going to be there. So it's going to be rad. And then, yeah, at Supernova, we're going to do the hybrid Japanese set, which is going to be very special.
Yeah. That'll be cool.
That's going to be wild.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So would you guys say that there's a concept behind the band, or maybe it's this particular release in terms of like the point of view that the songs were written in?
Well, the concept is just kind of never ending. I mean, we're just going to keep telling the story, you know, and Chris always says like that it's interesting because like the manga and the band can exist without each other kind of, you know, because lyrically, I think people can interpret the songs how they do. If they don't know there's a manga, they might get a totally different meaning out of it, which I think is super cool. And but Chris says having them both, though, just makes it an even. Yesterday, he was saying that, and I was like, oh, yeah, I totally agree with that. Having them together, though, it just really enhances it.
Yeah. Yeah, could you kind of explain that a little bit, Chris?
Yeah, so, like, lyrically, I wanted to make sure that all of the songs could stand by themselves. So like they're all told metaphorically, like there are things that will pop up in the manga that aren't like, you know, not literal, but the lyrics will allude to it. So like in the EP that we did, like there's a song about writing a letter and that's what the entire prologue portion of the manga is about. It's a letter that the main character is writing to his friend who he assumes is dead, but is actually like kind of trying to find him. And like, because this friend thinks that he's been kidnapped. Hey, I hope this letter finds you well. I finally tried to write this in the midst of raising hell. My ears are always ringing from the torch going great. Oh, what a difference a year makes. But yes, so like there's different parts that will tie in depending on how dorky you are and how much you're going to read into the lyrics.
The setting though is kind of post-apocalyptic. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's a setting of after like the 1% has essentially just fucked off to space. They're like, we can't live here anymore. We've done too much damage. The ice caps are melted. The hurricanes are making everything impossible to live anywhere. So they've kind of wanted to separate themselves from that, and they basically are using the resources and labor of Earth as their commodities. So they kind of own everything.
Okay. All right.
So yeah, the main character is part of that aristocracy, comes down to Earth by a number of circumstances, and then meets up with like the punk bands that he grew up like admiring. So it's like somewhat autobiographical in that way. Like I get to play fucking music with people I've grown up listening to. Like I saw fucking Ephraim playing when I was 13 or whatever. So it's like, you know, kind of cool and autobiographical in that way.
I was only about maybe 14 and a half.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to take a little side tangent here. I want to ask you, Ephraim, and anyone else feels like popping in, they can. I have some Death by Stereo questions for you.
Sure.
We're going to jump off a little bit on, we had Ian Fowles on the show a little while back, and we talked
about Ian, dude. We started the band together.
Yeah. There's some stuff he brought up I want to run past you.
Okay.
Okay. First question is, the band was almost called Fart Sauna.
100% true. 100% true. I voted for that name too. I was 100% in favor of Fart Sauna. I have the piece of paper with all the names that we listed on there, and they're all crossed out except for Death by Stereo. But we also thought about calling the band Ian and the Dicks. True story. True story. I put the name on the list. I put down the Electric Shoes for the name of our band. That, you remember the Wonder Years? That was
the
kids' band on the Wonder Years, the Electric Shoes, but got shot down. Everybody's really uptight.
Was Fart Sauna not your idea?
It'd be so much cooler with Electric Shoes right now.
Fart Sauna was a miss.
Fart Sauna was a definite miss.
That you missed with that.
But that was the name of our little rehearsal room at our drummer's house.
Yeah. Jared. And the reason it was called the Fart Sauna was because
it would get real hot in there and we'd fart a lot. and at Jared's practice room at his parents' old house, and Jared, who now fast forward, is doing pretty damn good, man. He's the drummer of My Chemical Romance.
Yeah. Damn.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. Blows my mind. I'm like, holy moly.
Once you leave Death by Stereo, you really succeed.
Yeah, you just got to quit our band. Just got to quit. We're stupid. Speaking of, we're so stupid. If we quit our band, the curse would be lifted and Mutiny would be massive. But
So the very beginning, who was it? It was you, Ian.
It was me, Ian, Paul Miner, and Jim Miner, the brothers. And Jared Alexander on drums. Paul Miner, who became a really big record producer and produces records for fucking everybody. Yeah. But and his brother Jim became a very, very famous tattooer and went on to pursue that career and has been very successful.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You quit the band, the curse is lifted. But Paul actually, Paul's probably recorded some of everybody's favorite records. It's crazy. I admire him so much. And he's recorded a lot of the Death by Stereo albums over the years.
Yeah, so Ian wasn't in the band very long. He ended up he was Mormon, so he went on his mission.
Yeah.
But when he left the band, I don't think you guys were, you weren't that big at that point, but when he came back, you guys were like signed to Epitaph.
Yeah, dude. Like we made a demo with Ian. And we knew the AFI dudes from getting that 7-inch, and you write them a letter and they send you back a patch or a sticker, you know? Uh-huh. And I remember Paul being, dude, check out this band AFI. I'm like, whoa. And he's like, yeah, dude, if we write them, we can get like a sticker. And I'm like, dude, write them, you know? And I remember they ended up writing him, hey, we're coming down to play a show. We need somewhere to stay. And those dudes used to stay at our bass player's house all the time. So that's our link to the Bay Area and ever playing the Bay Area is those guys. But I remember we gave them that tape and they, AFI helped us a lot. We gave them that demo tape and then they just kept giving us shows. Like, and then they took us on our first tour on the West Coast and did it was wild. And like, all because of that demo tape that we made with Ian. But yeah, Ian quit right after we made the demo. Then we made a 7-inch. Then we put out our first album on a label called Indecision Records, a hardcore label from Orange County. And then, dude, we, you know, did like all the DIY touring on that record. And then right after that, like, we got approached by Epitaph and we're just like, what? You're like, huh? Like, that's real, you know? So we thought it was a joke. We actually didn't return their calls.
Really?
Oh, because you got a message. You're like, oh, this is Rick from Epitaph. You're like, oh, yeah, haha, funny, Bob.
That's exactly what it was. Dude, we thought it was our friend Ryan Clark, who's hilarious. Paul was like, dude, there's a message on my mom's answering machine. This guy said it was Rick Gerwitz, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, it's fucking Clark. And I'm like, whatever, Ryan Clark. And then he kept calling, and then his assistant called. Hi, this is the assistant for Brett Gurewitz. And Paul was like, I think we need to call him back. Like, so we call him back, and then he came and saw us at a show that totally just bombed and hardly anyone showed up. And we were like, you know, we're like, fuck, none of our friends came. You know, like barely anyone came. People that came, I mean, it was so dope. But so we just slammed a bunch of beers and went, fuck it, and just played as hard as we could, and it worked.
Was it weird though, like you have like one of the founding members returns and you guys are doing pretty well? Did you feel guilty, or did he like try to get back in the band, or how did that, was there any dynamic there?
He came back and home and was, dude, Ian got right into a bunch of big bands, you know. He was doing just fine without us, but like no, there was no, I don't know, he never approached us about coming back. It was never like that. And Ian, I think, came back and just started doing new shit immediately, because he toured with Sensefield. He toured with Further Seems Forever. He did a lot. And I don't know. I guess I never thought about it, you know? The time just kind of went by. And
sure, yeah.
We were super busy for years, and so was Ian. You know, Ian was playing with some pretty big bands, and then, I mean, he ended up playing with Gerard Way and all that. And
oh, sure.
It's pretty incredible. You know, I think Ian's journey is like really incredible. And he's just so
Eagle Bones.
Eagle Bones is one of the most accomplished fucking dudes, dude. I mean, scholastically, and I mean, just, he's one of those, he's like a Rhodes Scholar, dude. You know, beyond school, that dude, you could sit and talk to him for fucking hours about insane shit that no one knows. Like, he's just that guy, and he's guitar god. So
yeah,
I love Ian. I really admire him. I think he's a very well known, but he's a very underrated guitar player, and I think there's a place for Ian amongst all the other guitar heroes, you know. Like, dude, he's easily up there, you know, the Warren Fitzgeralds and people like that, you know. I mean, Ian is for sure like, what's up, dudes, you know, like. Because when we were young, he had a Randy Rhoads necklace. Dude, yeah. And he was super into Randy Rhoads. So he was playing Ozzy stuff to me, hanging out at Paul's house. Just, like, yeah. Like, so, I mean, I kind of do wish that he would get an outlet to do something way more. Just, he needs to make a guitar record. Dude, Ian Fowle's guitar album. That'd be cool.
It's Kyle.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Tangent.
did Death by Stereo play with ska bands ever? Or
yeah, we did two cross-Canadian tours with Mustard Plug. There was this tour that used to happen in Canada called Snow Jam, and then it became a tour called Frostbite. And we did that with them. God, I'm trying to remember what years that was. It was a long time ago, but we did play with ska bands all over the place. Suicide Machines here and there, because, you know, Suicide Machines always crossed over into the like Epitaph fat world, you know. And we did Warped Tour with Real Big Fish, Less Than Jake, Boss Tones, Five Iron Frenzy, which I had a reunion with Five Iron Frenzy when we played with them in Denver with Voodoo. Like, I hadn't seen them since Warped Tour 02, and it was such a cool like friends reunion. It was awesome. Because we'd always have our little Death by Stereo tent next to their tent, like our merch tents, and we'd all hang out. It was cool. But yeah, I mean, we played with a handful of ska bands over the years.
Yeah.
Just trying to remember everything.
Was it Ninja Spy kind of ska adjacent? We did Japan.
Ska adjacent, Ninja Spy from Vancouver. We did a Canadian tour with Big D and the Kids Table. We also did Australia with Big D.
Yes, we did.
You've never played ska though, right? There's never been a Death by Stereo ska song?
No. You know what? And I don't remember why at the time we couldn't do it.
There's a dance part.
We got asked many, many years ago after Buddy Noel died. There was that Sublime tribute record that all the bands of the time that were all big. And we got asked to be on that record. And that would have been our chance to play a ska song. And then it just, I think we were on tour and the window closed and we couldn't get it to them in time. So which would have been so dope, dude. God, to play Sublime song. Fuck.
What would you have played?
I don't know what song we'd play. I love Sublime. I'm a Sublime fan.
Oh, yeah, same.
I saw Sublime so many fucking times. You guys saw Sublime, I'm sure.
Never saw Sublime, actually.
I was supposed to go see Sublime, and it was I got grounded for sneaking out to see Skank and Pickle.
No!
The show ended up getting canceled because he OD'd the night before.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, the show I was going to see, but couldn't go for some reason, was the show in Petaluma where he ended up being his last show.
Oh, no. That was on the Voodoo tour.
Yeah.
That was with Voodoo Glow Skulls, yeah. God, I saw Sublime so many fucking times, dude. Like, for, like, 8 people. You know what I mean? Like, dude, they were so fucking good, dude.
I got lucky to see them on the first Warped Tour ever. Them and, like, No Doubt played on that one.
Oh, it's so
sick
rad.
Of it all 7.
It's a great lineup.
Yeah, fuck. It was so sick.
Clutch.
But
I've heard Sublime could be hit or miss. So what's your take on them? You've seen them a bunch of times.
My take is that it was either the best thing you've ever seen in your life or anarchy. I saw them playing. I remember somebody was like, oh, Bradley took acid. And there was a big, big crowd. Nobody knew if they were going to show up either. You just go see Sublime and maybe they'd show up. And like, dude, he walked on stage and played with his pedals for like fucking a long time. Someone told me he was on acid. Maybe and I believe it because he was just playing. I mean, just making noise for a long time. Like, it was really funny. But then there was nights I saw Sublime where he was the most soulful, incredible singer and playing guitar so beautifully some nights, though, where you're just like, whoa, dude, this band rips. You know, like, dude, they were so good, man. So many good times seeing that band play. Chaotic times. It was cool. Interesting lineups because they would play with everyone. I saw them a lot with a band called One Eye Open.
Oh, yeah. I remember One Eye Open, yeah.
I was the local, like, merch kid for One Eye Open, and, like, they let me hang out with them. They had this like party house and they'd let me hang out at their house. And like 2 members of One Eye Open actually both did time in Death by Stereo eventually. But
ripping.
One Eye Open had a split with Schlong and the Janitors Against Apartheid. And so One Eye Open, like I kind of like, I saw Sublime a million times because they played with everyone. And I met Voodoo Glow Skulls. Like, they wouldn't remember meeting me, but like, I met Voodoo Glow Skulls because of When I Opened. You know what I mean? Like at a show, and like it. Yeah, they were a big gateway for me into seeing a lot of cool stuff because they opened for everyone. And they're part of kind of played with a lot of those Skunk Records bands, but yeah, I was around all that stuff around that time, but I was only like 9.
So, Mike, I'm going to apologize in advance. I didn't know you were going to be on the interview, so I did not do any deep op like research on you. But for Chris, we got a few questions for you. I hear that you're a mailman and that you love your job.
It's the best. It's the best. I'm not the ska mailman. I'm just a ska mailman. Adam's got the ska mailman on lock, but no, it's fucking sick. I seriously just walk around all day and listen to audiobooks and like podcasts and shit and just zone out. And I've lost like 40 pounds. Feeling good, man.
When did you start being a mailman?
Like 2 years ago, I think, a year and a half ago. The first week that I was doing it, I ended up breaking my ankle. Not ideal for mailman purposes. But yeah, so then I was off work for like 3 months or whatever while my this fucking dog. I'm sorry for people who cannot see this. This is so rad. This is perfect. Hell yeah.
Tell them what you're watching.
Yeah, what are you watching?
Oh yeah, I guess I gotta be real descriptive. There's a dog just chewing a bone here, going full ham on this. Mike, what is your dog's name?
His name's Walter.
Walter? Oh, Walter White. That's right. Hey, Walter.
No. Walter Sobchak from Big Lebowski.
Oh, shit. All right.
That's where his inspiration
Who's a good boy, Walter?
What type of dog is Walter?
Walter's a boxer Labrador, but he is probably a mutt more though, because I don't know. I got him from the shelter and they think he was a Labrador boxer.
100% a big lover boy.
Yeah, that's what he really is. He's 100% good boy.
Yeah. He's 100% good boy is his breed.
My dog was in my room the first 10 minutes of our recording, but is not in our, not in my room anymore. Were my dog in the room now, she would have started barking because she barks when she sees dogs on TV.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Oh, she understands the TV. Not all dogs understand the TV.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
I'm like, he doesn't bark at much, but he whines a lot.
Do you understand the TV, Ephraim?
I'm still trying to figure it out.
Okay.
I like looking at the TV. Do you mean the great picture machine?
Yes.
Wow.
We'll be right back after this.
So, okay, we should probably talk about two of the greatest ska songs that have been released in recent history.
Okay.
They were, one of them's called A Message to You, Chunti, and then the other one is called Paisa.
Well, thank you very much. That's awesome.
Okay, what could you tell us about these songs?
We were working on new manic stuff.
Manic Hispanic, everyone. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I had these specials idea for years. We talked about it a few times and it just kind of never came to life. And then I forget who brought, maybe Louis, one of the other singers, he might have brought it up. And then we were, oh yeah, let's, you know, and then we gave it a shot and like, dude, oh, like I couldn't believe it. And then Elvis came in. No, Louis came in also with the time bomb idea for Paisa, and then we just gave it a shot. It ended up working out and we got the recordings pretty close, I think, you know, mm-hmm. like,
yeah,
we played it pretty close, you know, and it just so happens that Louis, the other vocalist in the band, he plays harmonica, so he could do the part for the special song, and it just kind of all fell together. I'm so stoked. And then we totally got like the Rancid seal of approval. Stoked.
they heard it.
Oh yeah. And Lars posted about it. We're all, whoa. Like, know, wow. You know, like, holy shit. You know, so we can't believe that we're even a band still. Like, it's so crazy. Like, we're a cover band, you know what I mean? Like, we can't believe it. It's still bad and it's still going, and it's crazier than it's ever been. It's really lucky. It's really fun.
Now, what is your history with the band? Were you in at the beginning, or did you join at a certain point?
No, I've been a fan since the beginning. I was at their second show. I joined about 15, 16 years ago.
Okay.
But they've been a band since 92. So I was at their second show. I've always just been a big fan, you know?
Could you explain the concept to people? It's a pretty simple, funny concept. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Weird Al, but Chicano.
Yeah.
You know, so we
and punk.
Punk, Chicano punk, Weird Al. We take punk songs and do parodies of them. So I guess maybe like for a broader audience that might not know, you know, obscure punk bands like The Offspring's Keep Them Separated, our song is You Gotta Get Them Immigrated. So, you know, to give people an idea of what we're doing, you know. So you know, we do anything from Op Ivy Knowledge, where we change it to all I know is he's a tonto, the naranjo really don't know nothing. A tonto is like an idiot.
Yeah.
And then naranjo is the orange man. You know, so, you know, so, you know, stuff like that. It's like the fucking funnest thing ever. I think the songs kind of write themselves, but, and we have like an endless list of songs we still want to do. We're sitting on some recordings we haven't released yet. And we're working on ideas for a whole new manic record already.
You said you'd wanted to do specials for a while. Did you have the idea for the lyrics that
oh, yeah.
became? Yeah.
For years, like most of the lyrics, like the chunk of them, sometimes a chorus will just be swimming in my head for ages and I'll be like, but it'll finally come around like, oh, this is that one. All right, let's finish it. Let's write it out. You know, because everybody in the band always has funny ideas or it'll change the lyrics at the last second or like, say this instead. This is way dumber. All right.
There's like, I love that there's like little weird little very specific details, like the with the special song, it's the whistle style instead of the horns.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Yeah, exactly. Very Mexican thing, you know?
Yeah.
A message to you, Judy. A message to you.
It's just fun, and it's it. Although some of the songs we will say stuff, positive stuff, and things about, you know, uplifting our community, but we're more Cheech and Chong than we are Cesar Chavez. You know what I mean? But like, although we're way down with both, you know what yeah, I mean? Like yeah. we 100%. But you know, we're yeah. So. It's the fucking funnest shit I've ever done in my life. Honestly, I'm so stoked that I get to be in this band. And like, I was such a big fan for years and like, I can't believe it's real. And then it's like voodoo for me. Like, how the fuck did this happen? You know what I mean? Like, dude, like what? So yeah, Manic Hispanic's the funnest shit ever, dude. And we just announced 5 shows in May and we're trying to do it more. You know, the band just played Berkeley. I was with Voodoo somewhere else, but they played Berkeley. We have 3 singers, so we can kind of cater the sets, you know?
When you have like an idea, like how do the songs come together? Do you guys like rip them apart and just try to throw as many ideas into it as possible? Or
yeah, everybody just has like a bunch of ideas and we'll bring them together and like, all right, let's work on this one, you know? Like I had a Fugazi idea for years, you know, the I am a patient boy, I wait. The word huda is a slang for cops. La huda, pick me up. I weigh. You know, so like, that was just in my head. Every time I heard that Fugazi song, I'd be like, oh, it's burning a hole in my brain. And then finally, like, we got a chance to kind of wrap our heads around it. I was like, yes, we're doing it, you know? So we've got, like, not that I can like divulge yet, but we've got some ridiculous ones for the next one. We're gonna try and go like far with it, where it's just like people are gonna be like, I can't believe they played that song with a straight face. So the dumber the better for us.
Are these two the recent ones, the Paisa and the Message to You? Are these the first like foray into ska, or have you done ska ones before?
We've never done ska. I mean, we did Op Ivy, but it's not really a ska Op Ivy song. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, so it's our first foray into ska. It's our ska like EP, you know? So it's kind of cool, you know? And another thing, like before we even made the record, we were talking about like ideas. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm all we need to make for like, it ended up being on a shirt, not on the record. I'm all, we need the Dance Craze foot, but with like an ankle bracelet and a Cortez shoe, you know? We ended up making it a shirt. But, you know, Manic just works so well for ska. It's kind of crazy. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. No, those songs are rad. And the videos too. The videos are so good.
You know, I got to shout out Midway Feed. It's a feed store that let us use their store as a location for the video. They have like horse stables, all this stuff. So Elvis kind of cold called them, talked to them, figured it out. And they totally let us use the place. So in exchange, while we're there, we shot a commercial for Midway Feed. It's on our Instagram. Yeah. If you look at our Instagram, you can see it. We're like Midway Feed. We're all like showing all this. It's ridiculous. But like, that's how we were able to like stand next to horses and stuff in the video, because these just nice people at this feed store let us use their whole place. It was great.
Did you like explain the whole concept, or was it just like, hey, I have a band, can we shoot here?
Elvis kind of somewhat explained it. We got there. It was great, dude. It was just like real caballeros, like cowboy guys there just like looking at us laughing, wearing these ridiculous cowboy outfits, you know, like, like, you know, in Spanish, like saying, oh, you think you're a cowboy? You think you're a cowboy? It was really, and dude, there's a little couple of parts of the video where you could see guys in the background, like at a truck with hay and like the thing, like they were really doing it. We were like, quick, get the shot over there where those guys are working. We got in front of them, you know, like. But yeah, dude, yeah, I'm pretty hyped on it. I can't wait to record more Manic stuff. And we're trying to play more. And the great thing about our band being so old, and when I say old, I mean elderly, is that all the guys that have kids, their kids are like in college now, so they can finally like go play shows. Manic Hispanic is like the Elks Lodge for old punkers. We all get together, show off our belt buckles, hang out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, all right, now we can actually like, it was like boys' night out before. Yeah, now we can like go do stuff. So, you know, we've been talking about trying to like, try, you know, let's go to the East Coast, you know, let's give it a shot, you know, like, so we'll see, you know.
All right.
Nice.
Future is unwritten.
I think as well.
Yeah.
All right. So Chris, so your main band is Dissidente. So let's talk a little bit about Dissidente.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Give us the backstory. There's kind of a complicated, interesting backstory of this band. Like you form, like tell us about the formation of this band.
Yeah. So I had a ska punk, like much more traditional with horns and shit, band with the drummer Iggy, who is a Russian immigrant. And that like quickly fell apart because I cut a part of my finger off at work and just wasn't able to play guitar anymore and shit. So I was like, okay, all right, well that's, and then he like fucked off to the West Coast and like was living in LA for a minute. Came back and then trying to do the same thing, you know, with just the two of us. He had another Russian immigrant friend who was like living in the States for maybe like 2 weeks before I met him. So we could like not communicate whatsoever. But this is our bassist Vadim, and he's like just a fucking ripper bassist. So the only way that we could really communicate is I'd be like, and then he would play in turn with the bass. It was like kind of a cool way for us to feel that shit out. But yeah, and then we recorded a 7-inch. Bad Time released it, and then in that time we added another guitarist who's like a real metalhead. He's a dude from India, and so the sound changed a lot. And that was what we did for our LP on Bad Time 2.
What year was the formation of Dissidente?
I think it was like right like as Trump was campaigning the first time around.
Okay.
So so what,
2015?
Yeah. And so obviously that informed a lot of the lyrics.
Sure, yeah. So there's like this what, 4 or 5 year gap between your EP and your record?
Yeah, we were sitting on the LP for a long time, much like we were for Mutiny. but yeah, we were sitting on that for a long time just because our guitarist, Rhett, the Indian dude, he ended up going to grad school in Chicago. And so like we had to record it really, really fast before he was, you know, going off to school. And then we were just like, okay, well, we got to figure out what to actually do with the songs now, because we have his parts. We kind of got to work backwards now. So we had to do like the drums and things and the vocals and things after we had his guitar on to the click. So it's very different backwards way. I never want to record that way ever again.
You mentioned like, so there was like two different Russian immigrants involved in this history. Is there a large Russian immigrant community in Pittsburgh? You're from Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah.
Is that, or is it just like a weird anomaly?
I mean, I know of it now. I'm sure it's always been one of those things like kind of hidden in plain view, but like I never knew of it until I like started hanging out with all these Ruskies. And now it's like, you know, the most of the people I hang out with are, you know, either Russian or Ukrainian or, you know, Eastern European even. So
exclusively.
Yeah. It's a problem.
That's why we did this record online, because we can't hang out.
No,
you know, exactly. That's who gave you that hat, for real though, right?
Yeah, that hat, that
that's communist era hat, right?
Yeah, that's pre-Russian, that's Soviet era hat that was given to me by my drummer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang. Commie. Don't tread on me.
Red alert.
Watch out for this one, man.
When did you all meet then, Ephraim? Were you like familiar with Dissidente?
I knew about them through Eric.
Yeah.
Eric turns me on to like every like new band. Every band I haven't known. But yeah, I know about Dissidente through Eric. And then when did we first meet in person?
It was when you flew out to record and then we hung out and went to the Monster Trucks.
That was the first time we hung out in person, yeah. Huh? Yeah, our first meet in person was going to Monster Jam for Valentine's Day.
Actually, yeah, it was very romantic. Yeah, for sure. We got to go back to Monster Trucks, dude. I got to see that.
Oh, dude, I want to go back to Monster Jam so bad. I'm on Team Gravedigger for life.
Dude, oh, like, hell yeah.
Dude, Gravedigger didn't flip. It was incredible.
Yep.
Whew. Remember we all thought Gravedigger was going to lose?
Oh.
Gravedigger took it back, dude. Did a full back.
That shit's rigged, dude. That shit's rigged. Undertaker's always going to win. Gravedigger's always going to win. It's just how it goes. If WWE, Monster Jam, that shit, come on.
Are you trying to say that Monster Jam is fake?
Shout out. Shout out to Gravedigger.
Yeah, shout out Gravedigger, Team Gravedigger.
I didn't know this was a conspiracy theory podcast.
Yeah, this podcast is full of conspiracies.
As a Chicano, you're not going for El Toro?
That's such a rad one. El Toro has like the fucking horns and it's all blows out smoke.
Yeah, that shit was sick.
It's gnarly.
So Mike, what are the bands you're playing in currently? You're playing Adolescence?
Yeah, I'm touring around with Adolescence. I have a band that me and JP from Death by Stereo, we started called The Sun Must Die, and it's like a metal project.
Really fucking metal. Brutal. Please listen to that, everybody.
The Sun Must Die. I play guitar in that. So currently those are the ones I'm working on. And then Mutiny. In Death by Stereo.
What, when did you, how long have you been in Adolescence?
For about, I've played with them like 11 and a half years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a wild trip.
Yeah. What's that like playing in the Adolescence?
It's been fun. It's shows, you know, shows rad. Like the band's about to go on tour with Circle Jerks and Descendants. And those are pretty crazy fucking tours when we do those. We've done a few runs of that already. And yeah, it's a good time. It's,
you got to play with.
I mean, I play songs that are older than me. You know, but it's a really good time.
That's so cool. You get to Scott adjacent band.
Yeah,
Brad from Leftover Crack plays bass in Adolescence.
Brad's the best.
Yeah,
I love Brad. He's a rad dude to play with.
He's currently playing bass in Adolescence.
He plays bass now. Yeah,
that's cool.
It's a
Brad's new band is really fucking.
Yeah,
good.
Brad has a new band that called Instant Ruin. That's kind of like dark new wavy punk.
Crusty new wave.
Yeah, it's like exactly. Dude, it's crusty.
It's so insane. It's
him and the dudes from Chaos UK.
Yeah, two guys from Chaos UK, but they don't have a drummer. It's a
all programmed drums.
Yeah,
it's sick though. It's like it's weirdly modern and current. For a bunch of dudes, you know, that aren't 20.
Old crusty dudes.
Yeah, old crusty dudes making like really relevant sounding shit right now, actually. It's kind of cool.
It's really check good. It out. Everybody check out Brad Logan's new band.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
Let's talk about Voodoo a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I know your first show with Voodoo was in 2017 at the It's Not Dead Festival.
Yeah, already. We played two shows that day? I think we played two sets that day. We played It's Not Dead, and then we drove to the Observatory and played another set on, I forget who was on that show. It was a bonkers day for me.
Were you the official singer at that point, or were you sort of, like, was there a point where you became... an official member.
Yes. We did that show. And then I went on tour with the band to Canada. And I think no one knew if the band was going to stay a band or if we were just fulfilling the obligation.
Oh, that's right. Because these were already booked before with when Frank was still in the band.
Totally. And then it just kind of ended up working out. And everybody after Canada was like, we should just keep doing this, huh? You know, I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. like, let's go, you know, and then it's a wild ride from there, you know.
It was definitely an interesting shift because you and Frank don't sound anything like.
Yeah.
We both have like a can both get like a deep register, mm-hmm. you know? So we have that in common. And I never sang like Frank in my band, but when I went to George and Eddie's, like I tried to approach it, get it as close as I could, you know, at the beginning there. And we did that first tour and I was just really trying to respect his style because it's fucking dope. And Frank's like, such a gangster. And then later on, I started singing the songs more like myself, but I try to find a balance between me and him, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, you know, it's the lead singer. So the lead singer is pretty, you know, it's what a lot of people are familiar with more than anything is the singer. And you're coming in. At this point, you have your own like mask and everything. I don't think you wore the mask on those first shows or the first tour, did you?
That first show at It's Not Dead, I walked out. I had a little skull, like face. Little mask on just to have something to walk out because you know nobody really knew and I just walked down on stage and wore that for a couple songs and then took it off and like just rocked, you know. And then we had they gave me a couple masks they had, and then I ended up just getting my own like original one, you know. But it was weird. That first show, it was a real skull fuck, man.
Why is that? Why did it feel like such a skull fuck?
Dude, it was like there were 10,000 people at that show.
Damn.
Yeah, it was insane. It was like Rancid and Dropkick Murphys were headlining. It was insane. And plus, you know, 100 Descendants and fucking this band and that band and that band. And we played kind of midday, and dude, I couldn't believe I walked out and was all like his people. And I just kind of, I remember my heart racing and just kind of having this rush of like excitement and anxiety at the same time, you know. But I also had a roadmap on the stage of like verses and parts, you know, like if I could see that line, I just need to see the one line to trigger the whole part, you know.
Yeah,
I just had to learn so many songs like fast, you know.
Yeah.
And like you think you know songs from knowing a band for so many years until you have to actually sing them word for word. You're like, oh, I don't really know these songs, fuck, you know. Like, but and the catalog is pretty vast, so it was a trip, man. That first show was just kind of overwhelming. So many people. And it fucking went off. But the whole time we were playing in my head, I was like, just fuck. You know, so focused on remembering the next part. You know what I mean? Because that's the one thing about voodoo. Frank fits a lot of words into a little space.
Sure.
You know, and his lyrics are dope. But they're like, they just, it's like Jello Biafra, dude. He'll write like, just goes on and on and on. You know, like every part's different. Sometimes the choruses will have a couple words different, you know, like variations. And I'm, holy shit, I gotta remember this, you know, like so. But we played that show and it was fucking mind blowing. And then we got in the van and drove an hour to Santa Ana and then played on another show that was all, I can't remember who played that night, but it was all Mexican bands. So like the fests didn't, you know, interfere with each other.
Yeah.
Because that's the crazy thing about voodoo is we exist in two worlds. We're in Spanish-speaking world and English-speaking world. You know, like we've played fests where we're the only band that has lyrics in English.
Yeah.
You know, like so, you know, like we just drove an hour and just played this other fest. It was a crazy fucking night. Wow. Brad Logan was at that second fest.
Yeah. Yeah, he was bringing it all back around.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you sing any of the voodoo songs in Spanish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. You know, all the hits, the bigger ones. And, you know, we actually, we've talked about it. The next time we go to Mexico, we need to do more of the catalog in Spanish. you know. But I do a handful of them in Spanish.
Sick.
And we wrote one of the ones on the record that I did with the band. We did a song in Spanish. Yeah, man, it's a trip, dude. And then we went straight to Canada after those first shows, and it was just bonkers from there, you know.
Those first two shows and then that tour, I remember, you know, when the record came out, there was definitely a big, like, push towards, like, explaining that you're the singer.
Yeah.
But I imagine during that tour and those first shows, a lot of people probably didn't realize that Frank wasn't going
to
be there.
I can't tell you how many people walk up to me still all the time. Oh, different singer. You know? Or, you know what's funny is, dude, I can't tell you how many fucking times someone has walked up to me and been like, man, I haven't seen you since 98, bro. That fucking show on the fucking, when you guys were here with Lagwagon was so fucking sick. And I'm just looking at him like, I look so different from Frank. Like, yeah. So tall. Right? And I have long hair. And like, it's just kind of funny, you know, or people call me Frank sometimes. And there's just been times I don't have, like, you know what I mean? It's just, I don't have time to explain. And I just, oh, thank you. And I just walk away, you know, like, fuck, you know, but, you know, what am I going to do? You know, but it's, I think it's funny.
Yeah. It's better to just say thank you than feel like you have to correct him every single time.
100%. And then there's a lot of shows, like I wear the mask through most of the set. So some people haven't caught, like, left a couple songs for the end. You know, and yeah. Still don't know, you know what I mean? Or sometimes when I take it off, I once in a while I'll see someone go like, whoa, you know, or I'll have someone walk, like, hey, fucking Double Dario. And I'm like, yeah, it's me. Fucking no way. Yeah. You know, like, so it's kind of funny. It's weird.
Is there a story behind the mask that you chose, or have you developed like a character around that person?
I feel like I am definitely a character in voodoo, you know, and I'm a character in Manic Hispanic. You know, like I definitely developed characters, and when we made the mask, like we definitely wanted an original design, and even to down to like when we were talking to the people about how things were stitched, because on the temporary one I had before I had my own, like, oh, this thing kind of flaps over, folds, can you stitch it down? Like we really like worked on it, and then I was like, oh, can you add teardrops to it? Like make it dramatic, like, you know, like little things, you know. And it's definitely really my own mask. It's kind of neat. And it got made by a guy in Mexico called Mr. Mask Man. You can Google him. And he makes all the masks for like all the big wrestlers. It's cool.
Nice. So one of the things I've always been curious about with voodoo, you go see voodoo and more than likely there's going to be, you know, the character from Fermé, there's going to be like that character, someone in that outfit is going to come on and dance on stage.
Yes.
So who's in that costume?
Back in the old days, it was always this guy named Johnny Manny. And then, over the years, it's been different people. For a good amount of time, our good fucking friend, Nick, was the voodoo man every night, just our buddy, Nick. And then, our friend Percy did it on the last couple runs.
Shout out to Nick for letting me put it on and play Shoot the Moon at Punk in the Park.
Yeah, Punk in the Park, he wore it and walked out as the Voodoo Man and played Shoot the Moon, dude. Everyone went crazy. It was so funny, dude. It was great. But in Japan, it was... Are you guys familiar with a guy named Ukulele Hero?
Yeah.
He plays the ukulele. He's awesome. Look him up on Instagram if you don't know him. I know you know him. But he was our Voodoo Man every night in Japan on that Hayes Smith tour, so
hell yeah.
That mask has been around since since the 90s. Like they got it made by the guy who made the Batman mask, like the Michael Keaton Batman mask. Like there's
funk in there.
Oh, there's a lot of funk in that mask. It's been repaired before. It's still hanging in there, you know? So but it's yeah, that mask it's seen some shit.
It's so fun.
So joining voodoo you know, during there was like, you know, obviously some stuff went down with Frank and stuff went down between the brothers. What is that like for you? Is that something you kind of don't feel super privy to, or you kind of just
I kind of stayed out of it, and I was never really in the middle of it. I mean, you know, it happened and it sucks. And I think it sucks. But sure. At the same time, I'm grateful for the opportunity, you know, and I'm stoked to get to do it. And there's always like part of me though that's like, I hope it all works out. Like, I hope it all works out. It'd be rad if Frank came out and played with the Voodoo again, you know? I'm not against anyone, or I just think they're all dope. And, you know, I'd like to see it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's weird. But it was weird at first, and people were really cool, and no one really gave me any shit. There was a few people here and there that were like, you know, but for the most part, like, people were really cool about it, you know?
Yeah.
And the advice that George gave me was, look, dude, the other thing about wearing a mask, he's like, don't let them hate you before they hear you. You know, the bosh pit would get raging, and then I'd take it off, and what are they going to do? Like, fuck! You know? Yeah. So, you know.
I saw Voodoo with you in the band. It was in Albany when Omnigon opened. That was like 21 or 20.
Oh, yeah. At the Ivy Room.
Mm-hmm. I was definitely like, you know, once I saw you live, I was like, you know, I dug the album, but like seeing you live, I was like, yeah, this totally works. This is awesome. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, man. I've been pretty lucky, like pretty lucky. And there was one girl in particular I always remember. I've talked about it before in Albuquerque, New Mexico at the launch pad. Like while we're playing, she kept looking at me all.
No.
I remember a couple of times I looked at her and smiled and was just like, come on, you know? And then after the show, like she walked up to George and Eddie and they were all talking. She was, dude, very nice. And I looked at her and I'm all, hey, come on. And she's all, I don't know about you. She goes, it's just, I've been seeing a Voodoo for a long time. And I'm all, how old are you? And I forget what she said. And I go, well, I'm fucking 87 years old. I've seen Voodoo way more times than you have. And I go, I've been a fan of theirs longer than you. And she was like, fuck. You know, she was like, yeah. You know, and she was totally like, I get it. She's like, oh yeah, yeah, you know, like, and then we like had a nice conversation. I was like, man, I like them just as much as you do. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is fucking awesome. I get to do this. And she was totally cool after that, you know? So it's pretty, people have been really accepting and really, really cool, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I'm really glad that you stepped up because I was bummed, you know, at the idea of Voodoo not being a band anymore. Somebody had to helm that ship.
Dude, I was sitting at my old house in Hollywood. And we were around the little fire pit in our patio, and Crazy Tom and Monty from DFL were at my house. We're all around the fire pit, and they're all, dude, Frank quit Voodoo. And I'm all, what? And they're all, yeah. And I'm all, that sucks. You know, we were all like, yeah, it sucks. And then Tom goes, man, that'd be a rad gig for you, though. And Monty's all, yeah, you should reach out. You should reach out. And I remember being like, nah, they wouldn't want me to sing in the band. And, dude, just reach out. I did, yeah, you know, yeah. So it's wild, you know, super wild. Thank DFL, one of the greatest bands of all time. Love DFL.
All right, so Chris, here's a question for you. Pokemon side project called Ultra Ball.
Yeah.
Let's hear about it.
So that started off in like 2005. And it's been like one of those things I just like did it forever, and it's had different iterations, and like anymore, it's pretty much just like an excuse to come up with like bad puns for things. So like I have all of the original 151 Pokemon divided out into 19 7-inch records with different names. So I have like Operation Ivysaur, the Squirtle Jerks, Pikachu Gazi, yeah. Vermilion to Dead Tops. Like, there's a bunch of them in there. I mean, there's 19 of them. And it was one of those things, like, I started off, it was mostly, like, you know, ska, you know, synth punk, real, like, bomb music industry influenced, just because it was just me doing it. And then eventually I was like, I don't know if I can call these records these things. unless they kind of sound like it. So I'm trying to go through now and like record and like rewrite the songs to make them sound like whatever the source, like, and a lot of the same style that like that Manic does, where it's, you know, trying to emulate the sounds of whatever the source material was. But yeah, it's real fucking dumb. And it was cool. Like, that's actually kind of why like Mutiny ended up being like about a comic book thing, because I had with Ultra Ball, we played like a lot of like anime conventions and video game conventions and things, and those shows were bonkers. Like, they were super, super fun, and they have money to throw around at shows.
That doesn't hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
Did Eric tell you that when we were just in Japan, when we were in Osaka, we went to the Pokemon Center in Osaka?
No.
Dude, there's this shopping area in Osaka where it's all like, you know, like Gucci and Louis Vuitton and all that stuff. And we were looking it up on Google Maps, like, whoa, there's a Pokemon Center? We were looking for stuff to do. Well, what? So we clicked on it. And me and Jose and Eric just walked there. And it's this super tall building in the fancy shopping area where each floor is like, you know, kind of Louis Vuitton, da da da. And like on like that 16th floor, the whole floor was fucking Pokemon. Like, they had a Pokemon cafe. Like, they had like, you could buy Pokemon like dishes for your house. Or
hell yeah.
Cutlery. Like, it was like the most extensive Pokemon shit I had ever seen in my life. We couldn't believe it. It was mind blowing, dude.
Fuck yeah.
You need to go there and get some inspiration for your project.
Yeah. And it's a write off. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey.
So, Efren, I heard that you do tour managing for other bands.
Yeah, when I'm not on tour, that's pretty basically my job. I do production stuff. I work at different festivals, and I tour manage other artists. And I've tour managed anyone from this guy with the Adolescents to I work for a guy called Young Lean from Sweden, a hip hop artist, I guess you call it, cloud rapper. And then, yeah, a group called the Drain Gang. And I just did a tour managing an Italian progressive band called Goblin.
Yeah, Goblin. Goblin did the soundtrack to like some horror films in the 70s, like Suspiria, right?
Oh, yeah. Incredible film.
The music is so good and so weird.
Yeah. It was so cool touring with them. The band leader, Claudio, he's a composer. Dude, that guy has been a part of so much fucking epic music since the 70s, whether it's disco music or prog or touring films. It's incredible.
Quick side question. So you were tour managed by him, Mike. How is he as a tour manager?
Well, I mean, so Efrem exists on different levels and different dimensions. And tour manager Efrem is different than real life Efrem.
Oh, okay. Let's hear about tour manager Efrem. Yeah.
And tour manager Efrem is very strict, actually.
Oh.
He's very like,
yeah,
let's fucking do this. So yeah. It's nice, actually. I kind of...
I'm on the job.
It's not like touring with him. When I'm touring with him, he doesn't help at all. But when he's tour managing, it's very, very nice.
I run a tight fucking ship.
You should tour manage.
I am just stereo. Like, you know? I definitely like...
No, yeah, no shit. I've seen it in action. Yeah, it's
oh yeah,
it's crazy.
Oh yeah.
Efrem, when you're tour managing, what's the most important thing? What's number one on the list?
Number one on the list is making sure that I'm ahead of the game and I've planned way ahead of time so the day's smooth and the artist can focus on making art.
Hell yeah.
It's number one for me. Planning ahead.
Love that.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
You know, because it's so cool to just watch from behind somebody make a whole room full of people so happy and then see them be so happy in return. That's fucking cool as shit, man.
You know? Prior proper plan prevents piss poor performance.
Wow.
There you go.
There we go.
Acronyms.
Now, when you were tour managing Goblin, I heard there was a day where the van broke down and like somehow we still managed to make it to the show that night.
Yeah, we did break down. I forgot about that. We did break down. We broke down in the middle of nowhere. We were able to I just had to figure out getting someone to where we were to get us back on the road. And we made it to the Pittsburgh show. And the Pittsburgh show was great. It was at the smaller of the two Carnegie Halls. You know what I'm talking about, Chris?
In Homestead?
It's like a, there's like a library connected to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really cool. That was the thing with Goblin. We were going to like these really unique venues that would opera houses and places I'd never, you know, go to with my band. And also in towns that could facilitate it, they like in one city, they did the show set up on the floor in front of the screen in a 100-year-old movie house. Whoa. It was really cool.
Oh, were they playing along to the movies?
Yeah. What they do is like, they do different movies on different tours. So they'd be showing a film and then the band would score the film live. So like The dialogue was still there, but the band was doing all the score and they made it a little heavier and a little more prog heavy, but it just gives it, it's more impactful, I think, for the audience. And it's surprising and exciting. And then when the film's over, they do a 45-minute set of just like their actual original prog music. And then like greatest hits of songs from different movies. It was cool.
Wow.
Really cool. Yeah. Interesting. I get to see a lot of cool shit. Like, you know, I tour with Young Lean and the Drang Gang, and that's like a next level big. That's like big, big, big. And I'm doing like way heavier production stuff on those. And like, these are like guys that have to like run to the tour bus because they're getting chased by hundreds of kids kind of guys. So it's a whole different world touring, like a whole different world. Like we need security and stuff. It's so bizarre. It's not like adolescence where I need security to protect myself from the band. You know, but I really like all behind the scenes of everything. It's rad putting a show together, especially a show on that level, because you're dealing with all kinds of light and sound and crazy just production world. It's pretty wild.
Is that the biggest band that you've tour managed?
Yeah. I worked with a DJ called Rusko, who's pretty sizable. And then, but Drang Gang and Young Lean. Yeah. Young Lean had like, I think the most heard song TikTok ever or something like that.
Hmm.
Pretty fucking bonkers, man. You know, I'm like, whoa. Not like my fucking band, bro. You know, like talking to guys like that too, they'll ask you questions, you know? So what about your music? Ask me questions. I'm like, man, it ain't like this.
Do you think Young Lean likes ska?
Yeah, he likes punk. He likes ska. He's familiar with voodoo. It's cool. Like he asked me about it, and so I showed him voodoo. He just likes all kinds of music. And then the Drang Gang, who are adjacent to him in that same scene, two of those guys actually, after one of the tours we did, came and saw voodoo. We couldn't fucking believe it. We came to Punk in the Park and they're the nicest human beings. Like, but like, I was like, holy shit. You know, I go, if this was anywhere else but this festival, you'd be getting chased down the street. So it was kind of cool. They could walk around the punk fest and no one bothered them.
That's sick.
So it was neat.
Two different worlds. Yeah.
Totally different worlds. Like, it was kind of like that. Like we were in the backstage just hanging out. And I'm like, man, if these people only knew, this is famous rapper Echo 2K and his, you know, his famous DJ or whatever, you know what I mean? Like Ludwig, his famous DJ, you know, but from Stockholm. But interesting. Weird juxtapose between the worlds. You know, and I go get in a van with my bands, get back to reality.
All right. So Mutiny, we have one EP out. We have new music in the works. We have a few shows booked.
Pre-order for our album is happening for vinyl.
So this is the beginning. This is the beginning of something then. This isn't just a one-off.
Clean slate. Here we go.
All right.
Let's go.
A new world of music. I'm excited.
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying ska now more than ever. All right, episode's over. Now we're going to do the whole episode again in Japanese.
That's going to be, I got to learn Japanese before we record it though.
Oh shit. Well, it might take us a while to get that other episode out. But hey, if you want to hear the rest of this episode, and you definitely do,
you do,
head over to our Patreon. We've got a thing called Behind the Curtain where you can hear the rest of this episode and so much more. For only $5, you'll be supporting this podcast and you'll get to hear the rest of this episode. Nick, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, so imagine our podcast on steroids. That's behind the curtain.
Maybe not steroids, but maybe a different drug.
Yeah.
We definitely talked about that.
Yeah. So on a different drug, not steroids. That is behind the curtain. It is everything you've ever wanted from a podcast.
Is it?
Yeah, definitely is.
It is.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.